You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.
Testing, 1, 2, 3. I drank too much again. It's Sunday. We're recording a podcast still.
Jordan, can you
hit the test? That's because you're a team player.
That's me.
You are determined to power through all of your mistakes. It's kind of a metaphor for life, isn't it?
Hoo yeah. Welcome back to another thrilling episode of the Toilet Hell Radio Show. I'm Joe Thrash and Kill. With me, I've got my good friends, 365 Days of Horror. Say hi.
Hidely ho, neighborino.
And Brenoside.
I'm not saying hi today. You guys are just going to have to record the show and assume I'm sitting there quietly.
Okay, that'll work. Breno's got a hurt tum-tum and an achy head because he's got the brown bottle flu.
I'm just like sunglasses inside right now.
When will you learn, Breno?
When they come up with a new prohibition to stop me, because clearly I can't control myself.
I think that worked really well the last time around they had a prohibition.
You know, at least 40% of the country would probably be into prohibition right now.
Okay, I don't know what I was looking at the other day, but I was reading that some folks predicted a new prohibition coming about, which I guess I had never considered. It seems pretty left field for me. What I'm saying is learn how to make bathtub gin right now. That's the official Toilet of Hell stance.
I just, I can't imagine, like, a Trump voter without, like, a Coors in his hand. Yeah. So I don't know how well that's going to go, even if it was a Republican stance.
Well, you got the evangelicals. They're famously teetotalers, I guess. Some of them, anyway. But that's not, like, the majority of his base. His base is, like, you know, used jet ski dealership owners. And those guys those guys pound Coors Lights.
Yeah, those are the only people that voted for him. It's just used jet ski dealers. That's how many millions of people showed up to the polls and put him in office.
There's a lot of used jet ski dealerships around town, man.
I guess so. I just wasn't aware. The flyover states are kind of a mystery to me, so it could be.
Yeah, where
just
are you,
a used jet ski going through a cornfield in Nebraska.
I was about to ask, where are they riding all these jet skis?
Probably through the cornfields.
Well, I don't want to bury the lead on this one. The main event for this show is that our power metal correspondent, chief power metal correspondent, is out in the field again for us today. We've got Nina from A Sound of Thunder conducting an interview with a little band called Sonata Arctica. Did I pronounce that right?
That sounds right.
I think you have to do it a little bit higher when you say the name.
Sonata Arctica!
I don't know.
We'll work on it.
I don't know if they're a big falsetto band.
Okay, so here's where the rubber meets the road. I never heard Sonata Arctica in my life, but you have.
Have? I mean, I don't know. Like, they have a place in my heart as, like, one of those twinkly power metal bands that I consumed often in my teenage years.
So, what can you tell us about this band?
They're a bit more emotional than your typical power metal band, especially in the earlier 2000s. Like, in the 90s, I think they were a bit more, I don't want to say typical, but they were about what you would expect.
In my early metal learning about metal days on the internet, I once saw someone refer to Sonata Arctica as flower metal. I think they meant it derisively, but I actually think it's a really good descriptor, because a few weeks ago when we had the Hammerfall interview, Breno, you kind of described them as like raise your hammer up high and fight stuff, whereas there's a power metal that's all about like prancing through a field with fairies, and I think that's more of a fitting description of Sonata Arctica.
A lot of it I thought was like more just general goth sad boy emotions. Like, if you listen to the song Paid in Full, it's definitely not an elven song. It's more about just like, you know, being a skinny white dude who's sad about being broken up with, you know.
Black my wrists.
It's exactly like that, yeah.
Not, I'm thinking, I mean, not, songs like The Cage or Victoria's Secret. Those are pretty upbeat, dancey, prancy songs.
And you got a dude playing a guitar.
Oh, hell yeah.
Unironically.
Oh, no.
At least I think it's unironically. He is European.
Yeah, they're Finnish, I think.
Yeah, there's no irony in Finland.
Well, I don't. The Finns are, of all the different types of Euros, those are the most confusing to me. I guess because I've had the most interaction with them.
Which is weird because they're also the most metal people, like, in the world.
Yeah, they're, you know, a metal album releases there and it's like in the top 10 for albums sold. Like almost all of the Sonata Arctica records have gone gold in Finland.
It's the chief export.
It's true. That and unnecessary punctuation. I don't.
What about like weird licorice fish cream treats?
Is that a thing?
Get enough of those. I guess there's herring. Like a there's like a blob of fish cream you can just eat off a plate.
Oh.
And when I talk shit about when I was like, what is with you like culinary masochists, some English gammon boomer like came at me about, you know, how we have Oreos in the States and I should shut the fuck up.
I mean, they have Oreos over there too.
I know. I was like, that's how he knows about it. He's got like an American section with a fucking Twix bar and he can't stand it.
I won't have you talking about more meat pies.
You have an uncanny ability to piss off people, especially this week. Didn't you upset some random goth Instagrammer?
Wait, what?
Oh, yeah. So, I didn't do anything. I didn't say anything or make any approach to this person. This person had somehow found an article I wrote for That's Not Metal way back. I'm talking, it was like my eighth or ninth article total on this site in like 2010 or 2011. And it was just, I made fun of bondage pants, like the Big Trip NYC Hot Topic pants that a lot of people still were wearing around that time. And I just made a point to mock people who were still wearing those. And I had like a list of things that could be attributed to people in Hot Topic pants. Off the top of my head, some of them were how they appreciated ADHD-fueled cartoons like Invader Zim, where it's 22 minutes of screaming the entire episode.
Yep. Hey, made a comeback.
Yeah, that's probably how this article got found. What else? It's like, you know, Slipknot is the best band ever, except for Tool, of course.
Wearing gas masks for no discernible reason.
That I don't think I mentioned that, but I did say that usually with the Trip NYC bondage pants, you also had like an oversized baggy t-shirt to go with the pile of laundry look.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it helps if it says something clever on there, like some people are only alive because it's illegal to kill them.
Right. And yeah. So this was some Instagram page that, you know, this particular post about my post that was linking to it and everything got like 8,000 likes and just as many comments, and I like ran away screaming. I didn't want to read anything that was said there. I just want people to leave me alone. You know, my fighting days are over.
You done good, champ.
Yeah.
Instead, you just have to join us for the weekly shit talking.
Yeah, just leave me alone.
But I'm not here to talk shit on Sonata Arctica because Nina did a great job with this interview, and she's a fan of the band, and we love Nina, so therefore we love this band. Because they wanted to help us out.
They're a very good band.
What I'm going to do after this, of course, is I'm going to find some of their music to put on the show, and then I'll be able to judge for sure then.
Yeah. We got to find out their latest and greatest. Like I said, this was like back when I was a teenager. I fucking loved this band. That was getting up there in years now. It's been a little while.
We're all getting old. Christ.
Yeah.
You especially, since it was your birthday this week again.
It was good. My wife, a lovely wife, made me a cake for Homer to ruin. She copied the Homer ruining cake from The Simpsons.
You mean it's not McGaggy's birthday?
And that was lovely. And she got me a T-shirt that I don't think I can ever wear anywhere. It's the Coors Rocky Mountain logo and a picture of Frank from Always Sunny, and it just says Whores on it.
You should fucking wear that everywhere. You should wear that to work.
Church.
So, yeah, that's my new party in shirt, I guess.
Bail hearings.
And yeah, we went and watched a bunch of boxing last night, which that's a good time, man. For the most part, when you have like young, hungry fighters that are just putting everything out there for four rounds at a time. And then you've got fights that are guys that were up-and-comers and are kind of making a comeback, and they need to have a couple of tomato can opponents before they can get there. And you're just like, ah, that guy should have never gotten in the fucking ring. What the fuck is this?
Like the fat 38-year-olds who are like 3-18.
Yeah, I watched a guy who was undefeated until he fought Canelo Alvarez like a year ago, and then thought about retiring because he lost to Canelo and came back to fight the Missouri State champion, who is 4-14 total. And that was, I felt so fucking awful watching this guy. Like, why did you even come down here from Missouri, man?
You just gotta tip him over when he gets tired and you'll win.
It was just baffling to see this guy like doubled over the entire way, leading with his chin. If you're not a boxer, that's what you want to do. You want to put your chin closest to your opponent's fist.
Keep your hands at your sides. Give them your chin.
So, boxing, crooked, horrible sport, but a lot of fun.
The sweet science.
Mm-hmm. What else you've been seeing? What's been the haps?
I got King Diamond tickets this weekend. I'm excited for that.
I that tour got announced, and I gotta say that lineup looks pretty good. 2 out of 3 bands, not bad.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure someone somewhere out there is really excited to see Uncle Acid and the Deadbeats. I don't think it's any of us.
Nope.
But Idle Hands, I'm definitely interested in seeing. I'm kind of new to them, but from what I've heard, there's like a lot of things I like in it. It's not perfect. It's not like album of the year kind of material for me, but it's definitely, I want to hear more of them, and I'd like to see what they can do live.
Oh, for sure. I've played that band on this show twice now, I think, from their two different releases, and they're very exciting. I think that they're going to do some really, really cool things, and like getting this tour opening up for fucking King Diamond, like that's a huge, huge step. So,
yeah, good for King Diamond for actually taking out newer bands. Like, he could have easily just picked out whatever, Saxon and other bands that have been around for 30 years that he's friends with or just wants to throw a bone.
I'm like, amazed Anthrax isn't opening the show.
Yeah, well, Thrash is a good example of a lot of classic bands that just take out other classic bands, and maybe they'll have one younger opener. And even then, it's like a Toxic Holocaust or something that's been around for 15 years already. So get your shit together.
Great. So we chatted briefly about you getting tickets to the show, and the Worcester Palladium specifically is kind of the central hub for like good metal acts to perform at. But it's just about all standing room for both parts of the venue. But you were saying something about how the ticket prices were different, and there was different places you could or could not stand based on that.
Yeah, it's weird. This isn't a general admission show, at least as far as I can tell. Normally, you just everyone pays whatever one price for a ticket, and you get to stand and walk around and go wherever you want. But this one is like different tiers for standing in different places. Like the cheapest ticket, which I got, is $40, and you like stand in the back of the room, and it's a big room too. I think this place can hold I don't know, 1,000 people maybe, give or take a
couple thousand, maybe
something like that. And the last time I saw King Diamond at the Palladium a few years ago, it was general admission, and I think the tickets were like $40, and you can go wherever you want. And this one's just like, if you stand here, it's this price, but if you stand a little bit closer, it's more. If you want to sit up in the balcony, it's $150. Or they have in this venue, which I've never seen anyone pay for before, is like little seating areas towards the back. They're like little half circle lounge seats. They're selling like 3 to 4 tickets for an absurd amount of money for that. And it's just like, you're not even close. You're standing, or you're sitting directly in front of people who are paying $40. Why would you do that?
Yeah, yeah. And also there's going to be people standing right in front of you too, right?
Oh, yeah. And there's VIP stuff too. Like, you meet King Diamond and you do this and that. $500, and it's sold out.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I don't know how they're going to police that. I'm interested to see. I'll probably go, because I've actually never seen King Diamond live. So to get the chance, I might as well before he decides to, you know, give up the ghost, so to speak.
I would recommend anyone that's listening to this, if you like heavy metal at all, go see him, because it is a ton of fun. You don't even need to know the songs, because there's a whole stage show, there's props, there's all sorts of stuff going on. So it's like an entertaining show. It's not just, cool music, this is fun, let's let him hit the high note. It's like there's stuff going on.
It's
something that doesn't happen anymore.
Like that, I'll be there, man.
I saw King Diamond several years ago at a festival appearance. Unfortunately, like, they did the whole damn thing with his stage show. It was like, you know, the mansion multi-level stage setup with a huge swinging gate out front. Like, just incredible shit. And I'm so glad that I, like, stuck it out in the rain and the cold to see that, because it was one of the best metal performances I think I've ever seen.
So. And you get Grandma.
You get Grandma, man. You gotta go. You guys gotta go. I'm thinking about making a trip to Dallas and sleeping on Kit's floor to go see this.
But doesn't he live in Dallas, King Diamond?
Does he?
At least a few members do.
Okay, he might. I thought for some reason he split his time between the U.S. and Copenhagen or something.
He might. Maybe his summer home is in Dallas. Maybe you'll see him walking around, I don't know, a Kroger or whatever supermarket they have down there.
He has, like, a nice tan coming through his, like, white face paint.
So, good tour. Let's all go, and then we'll talk about it. That concludes the positive section of this week's show.
Now let's get to what we're all here for, the bad stuff.
All right, what do you got for me? Show me your reports.
Chris Turner, the drummer from Orange Goblin, had his visa denied as having all sorts of horrible visa problems right before the band is supposed to come to the U.S. for a bunch of shows.
Where is Orange Goblin from? Is it the UK?
The UK.
I figured that we had, you know, I know that our entire immigration and visa program is super racist, but I figured they had a pass, like, oh, these are white people, it's okay.
Brexit, man, Brexit.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm happy to see that it's you know, everybody's going through it. That's a positive spin. But, fuck, I mean, you read the story of what the guy went through, what they expected from him, and how he managed to deliver anyway, and they still failed to give him the visa in time.
How
or
is
deny
this,
it outright.
How is this so fucking hard? Like, I feel like they've got manning the immigration desk is just one of those mechanical birds drinking water.
Yeah, it's ludicrous. I had applied for a government job before, long, long time ago, like in my early 20s. It would have been like a tech support job where I would have helped like fucking army ass jarheads figure out their computer stuff over the phone. And it was like the worst application process of my life. You have to be able to write down every single relative you ever have ever. And I'm talking like step relatives, cousins, second cousins, and like where they live, how old they are, when they're like just their birthdays exactly, and what they do for jobs. And it was just so obscene and so fucked up. And from the sounds of it, he went through a similar process just to try to get this visa.
I have a friend who was telling me that he got a job offer, so he accepted it. He put it in his 2 weeks notice. And then he got rejected from the job because it was for the government. It was a background check. Something came up, like a flag on it for like a minor in possession of alcohol charge or something. So then he was just fucking months and without a job.
Same thing happened to me. I was rejected because of my credit score.
Really? They can do that?
Yeah.
The fuck does that matter?
Like, I wasn't good with my credit cards. I had a low score, so they rejected me, and they told me that on the phone.
You can't rent a carpet shampooer, so we can't have you work for us.
Right, right. Because I guess I would steal government secrets and sell them to China for money so that I could pay off my debts, right?
I mean, I guess that's the logic of it, but I think if we look at like the history of white collar crime or whatever, it doesn't necessarily matter what financial situation you're in. People just will fucking do whatever they want.
I'm pretty sure Trump's rich friends are doing that right now anyway.
Yeah, none of them are renting carpet shampooers.
No, they own those motherfuckers. That's the difference between the proletariat and the bourgeois.
We own the means of production of a clean carpet.
As well.
Marx was right. Are they going to get a replacement drummer for this? Everybody else was approved, but not this guy?
Yeah, everyone else was approved, and the show must go on, and I think they have another drummer lined up who's, like, quickly learning all the songs, and they're still going to play, and, you know, a bunch of writers and metal outlets are encouraging people to go to these shows to help the band out, and I actually have the entire statement from the band if you want me to run through it real quick, just to see all the absurdity of how much these guys have had to go through just to come play a couple shows here.
Read on, brother.
It is with a heavy heart that we have to report that our drummer and an integral member of the band for 25 years, Chris Turner, will not be boarding the plane tomorrow to play the upcoming U.S. tour dates. Despite starting our visa application process over 3 months ago, despite having one of the top companies put our petition in, despite the endless red tape and hoops we had to jump through, we were only given a last-minute embassy appointment. At that appointment, Chris was told that he would have to provide extra information for administrative processing. This despite having had 6 U.S. working visas previously, as well as a U.S. Social Security number. This extra info required was 15 years international travel history, every single Orange Goblin show outside the U.K., plus every single personal and family holiday Chris has taken. 15 years address history, 15 years employment history, all the names and birthdays of his entire family, every phone number and the email address he's used in the last 15 years, and all his social media info. Bear in mind, Chris has no criminal record, even had a clean driving license for over 30 years. He is not a member of or affiliated with any political group or organization, and he hasn't traveled to a blacklisted country. Chris managed to get all this information emailed over to them within 4 hours of the embassy appointment. Despite this, despite the hard work of our U.S. agent, despite the hard work on Chris's behalf from our U.S. legal team, despite having a U.S. senator's office supporting his case and contacting the embassy directly, despite all of this, he still hasn't had a visa issued and will be unable to travel to the USA. No information has been forthcoming. In fact, as it stands, he hasn't even had his passport returned to him, possibly by next Thursday. He still then won't have a visa and may not ever get a visa. According to our legal team, they've seen an increasing amount of this extra info request since the current administration took over, and it's becoming harder and harder and more expensive for touring artists to visit and work in the USA. In this case, specifically, they can find absolutely no reason why this info was requested of Chris, why the process is taking so long, and why there is zero information forthcoming from the embassy in immigration. In their opinion, Chris has just been singled out for reasons or by individuals unknown. Not only is this a shitty situation for Chris, but it's a terrible one for the band. We've already incurred $15,000 to $20,000 in costs, visas, flights, accommodation, crew, merch, backline, hiring, etc. And for the band not to do these shows would bankrupt us. Orange Goblin would cease to exist. Consequently, Ben, Martin, and Joe will be traveling. Have fortunately found a substitute drummer, Mr. Chad Wells, who is learning the set in a few days and will spend all day Monday in a Manhattan rehearsal studio going over the songs ahead of the first show in NYC on Tuesday. It's not ideal. It's actually far from ideal for everyone involved, but suffice it to say, we're all working flat out to make these shows happen. If you are planning to see Orange Goblin in the USA, we need your support now more than ever. Come to the shows, show your support to the band, show your support to the substitute drummer, show your support to Chris, buy some merch, drink some beer, and never let the bastards grind you down.
I know that, like,
Jesus,
a huge portion of metalheads are viciously apolitical, it seems like maybe something like this could get them to realize, hey, maybe our visa and immigration system is incredibly fucked up. Like, just arbitrarily keeping people from going to where they need to go. Maybe I should give a shit.
Yeah, it's, I mean, whatever your politics are, this administration is, like, objectively bad for metal music. All of the best metal bands don't come from America. I'm sorry, that's the facts. And if they're going to want to come here to play shows for us, they have to be able to do so easily and not so expensively. I don't think Orange Goblin is that massive of a band. Like, hearing the costs and everything they have to go through in spite of all that, is it's like, it makes my stomach turn.
I figure that just like, this is just going to ramp up like a trade war where, like, China will ban Five Finger Death Punch from touring there.
Oh, no.
And then we're just stuck with them.
It's humanity's truest loss.
I just remember, I think this was like early 2017. I think it was Wormrot had visa troubles and like couldn't come over.
Yeah.
And like back then, I'm just like, oh, here we go. Like, this is the start of it. And I remember a few people being like, this happens all the time. It's not a big deal. It's still happening. It's going to continue happening. And these are just people that want to come here and play shows. I know in dealing with just like immigration issues, people, assholes want to say that, like, oh, you have to do it right. Oh, you have to just wait in line and fill out the forms and stuff. And this is someone who like just wants to play a couple concerts, and you see how many hoops he has to go through despite already having been to the U.S. several times and having a social security number and not having a record. Like, there's a problem. And I don't understand how some people still don't see that.
I feel like since the Orange Goblin that isn't the band took office, we're fucking dealing with this shit like several times a month with all sorts of European bands and otherwise. Like, it's definitely been way more of a thing than it's ever been before. And it's just a fact of the matter. And I can't imagine bands wanting to come to the U.S. much longer. We're going to be like the next Russia when it comes to fucking touring music. Like, oh, don't go to the U.S. It's fucked up and it's impossible and it's way too much money. And, you know, you end up playing fucking dive bars to 11 people anyway.
All of those things are true.
Yeah.
It's just like, I don't know, man. Like, we're just talking about dudes who are trying to play, like, some rock and roll music. And you expand that to people that are trying to escape, like, unspeakable violence and famine. So, like, just fucking open the borders. Who gives a shit, man? Open borders everywhere. We should be able to go.
Yeah, man. I'm all for one earth policy. I don't give a fuck. Like, whatever. Just whatever. Why? Anyone? It's the same fucking argument for the Second Amendment, meatheads. Like, anyone who wants to come in here illegally is going to do it. And like, if someone wants to like actually do some horrid terrorist attack to America, they just have to realize, okay, maybe I shouldn't go through these extremely tough vetting legal channels to do it. Maybe I should just take a fucking plane and do my thing. Like, obviously we're not going to have like an ISIS member go through this channel and get found out that way.
Well, no, because ISIS broke up years ago.
Yeah, too bad.
I don't know, man. Like, all this shit's imaginary. Like, it's just a bunch of paperwork for the sake of fucking paperwork. It's nonsense. It's just a way to, I don't know, be a little fucking dictator of your stupid, shitty desk job.
Make the sunglasses and goatees on Facebook happy.
Yeah.
It's like TSA on steroids.
Have we ever talked about TSA on this show?
We don't have to.
Probably not, because I'm still allowed to fly, I guess. I'm a pretty chill, even-handed dude, but I've lost my fucking mind talking to TSA agents IRL. terrible, terrible, like, shouldn't exist. Your job shouldn't exist. You should, I don't know, go fucking plant wildflowers or something, make an actual difference.
Have you ever been pulled out of line at an airport by a TSA agent?
Yep.
Yes.
So have I.
It's because of my death metal shirt, man. It's because I think every metalhead dealt with it.
I think it's because they can sense my just filled with rage aura yelling at
everybody. I had one where they just rolled something on my hands, and I still don't know what it was, and I was deeply concerned afterwards. It was like a paint roller. And like, I someone please explain that to me.
Maybe some kind of like invisible ink so that you could be confirmed as like, I don't know, a Jewish man later or something. I don't know what the fuck the TSA does for whatever reasons they do. Like, one time I got taken out, the guy like had gloves on and like rubbed me down. He was like, I'm just going to give you a little back rub, and then proceeded to grab my balls.
Made me throw away a tiny little jar of honey I got from Cuba.
Just, you should have like, chugged it just right in his face.
Experienced diabetic coma immediately. No, I was just like, this is security theater. This isn't a real job.
You're lucky we heard from you after that.
I guess this is one of those things where I realized that because I'm like a natural born citizen or whatever, and also a white guy, that I kind of have a little bit more leeway to be a dickhead. And I guess this is one of those situations that makes me so angry I throw my weight around a little more than I should. So next time I go for a flight, if you don't hear from me again, that's what happened.
Just jump cut to Guantanamo Bay. What are you in for, honey?
I either take a train or I drive. Most likely drive, because last time I was on a train, it was going 31 miles an hour to Chicago. And I was like, is this 1848? What the fuck?
Yeah.
It's funny, if you actually go on a train, it's really eerie, the complete lack of security to get onto like an American Amtrak, I guess this is what I was trying to say.
They sometimes don't even check tickets. That happened to me when I went up to Boston. I took Amtrak up from where I was. No one taking tickets. We could have just walked right on, walked right off.
Yeah. You just go on the platform. You don't even see the conductor or whatever. You just get on the train and go.
Yeah. I've taken Amtrak a couple of times, and it was just like, oh, this is – all right, cool. This is the way traveling should be.
Yeah. This is exactly how it should be with planes.
Not too long after 9/11, I took a train up to Montreal for a little, like, mini vacation when I was younger. And I remember having to, like, just stop at one random station, and – police officers came on with like the serious guns and were asking everyone for identification, and one guy refused and they took him off the train, and I don't know whatever happened to him.
Just turned around and looked at everybody and said, no ticket.
I think I would gladly trade the TSA for like big scary armed marshals on a plane that are just there and very upfront about it, and like just let us sit down and make sure we don't cause trouble. Like, that'd be fine. We should just do that.
I don't know what it is. Like, sometimes I go to the airport and there's dudes with like huge automatic rifles and dogs, and sometimes there's not. It's like, I don't know, do they just have like a recurring schedule?
Yeah, anyway, it's not hard to go. Come to America, play some shows.
I mean, there is another travel option that we could use, and that is the Slayer race car that no longer exists.
I bet it could go the late speed record.
What a great metaphor for the band. You've got a thing that's supposed to promote their farewell tour, I guess doing 500 laps and then never getting off
the ground. Not going anywhere, just going in a circle forever.
I think it's so great that like evangelists are just so deeply ingrained in NASCAR culture that they were able to get like a Slayer logo off of a car.
I don't even think that there's that many evangelicals that watch NASCAR. Again, NASCAR's primary audience is you ski dude.
Damn it, them again. Someone got it banned. Like, somebody complained enough to get it taken off the car.
If you've ever been to a NASCAR race, I don't highly recommend it, but if you've ever been, what you will see is a den of depravity with the drunkest humans you've ever seen in your life, just baking in 100-degree weather, all skin exposed, turning an eerie purple color.
Yes.
So it's like a football crowd with less teeth?
Yes, precisely.
Oh, yeah. We have like random stock car racing up here, where it's like an even lower level of NASCAR. It's even trashier. My buddy was very into it. We were younger, and I went to a couple of those, and oh my God, man. It's like, I thought we were the North. What's happened here?
I've been to a number of different, I guess, vehicle sports things, NASCAR, drag racing, minor league stock car stuff, but the only one that's fun is the Demolition Derby.
They should just replace all NASCAR with Demolition Derby.
And what's crazy to me is that the first one that I went to, I noticed like almost every car in the Demolition Derby was a fucking Pinto. You know, the cars that exploded with, in a fiery like crash if you tap the rear bumper. I guess that they had accounted for that somehow.
Yeah, maybe that's the point.
I didn't see anybody engulfed in flame, so maybe they they put a little metal piece there that that Leah Iacocca refused to do back in the day.
Then you must not have been to one of the good ones.
Yep.
Well, speaking of like absolute wrecks, what do you think? We should cut it off here, give some room for Nina and the boys to talk about some things that are good and metal and true and real, and maybe leave the motorsports talk for another day.
I guess. Join us for next week's episode, which is nothing but sports talk all the time here on K666 The Fan.
We could also talk about, in light of how we're talking about the newest Slipknot member being like a tortilla face, we can talk about like our favorite kind of tortillas and what most resemble his face.
Okay, I'm into this. Are we going to go with variants as well, like the tortillas from other cultures, maybe like fry breads or pitas and such?
Naan. Like, if he was a naan face, man, that would be cool. Yeah. I think naan face sounds pretty cool anyway.
That sounds like a new metal band, kind of.
I think it's a Studio Ghibli character.
Yeah. All right, let's get the fuck out of here. Let's get some folks who know something about metal on. Let's have Nina and Sonata Arctica. Bye, everybody.
Bye, keep it metal, bros.
Bye.
So I'm Nina from Toilet of Hell, and you are Henrik. Am I pronouncing that right?
Yes, that's totally right.
Okay, just making sure. I was checking out you guys' new album, and I was trying to make sure that I was pronouncing it correctly. Can you please pronounce the name of your new album for me?
Oh, sure, but I would like to hear you try it first.
Oh, my God. Okay, well, this will be awful. It looks like Talvio.
That's pretty close. It's Talviua.
Talviua.
Talviua. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, okay. See,
that's,
I see it. Like, where you know, in the U.S., we see a Y and a Yo and an O, and I immediately think it's Yo. So, cool. Well, cool. Learning close. Something for the day. Can you tell me what that means?
That means winter night.
Oh, that's nice. Okay. So, fitting along with the Sonata Arctica theme.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very cool. Very cool. Okay, so I would love to learn more about this new album. Can you tell me a little bit about this new album and like what inspired it? How you came up with the name for it? I want to know all about it.
Well, I mean, I think the inspiration for our music has been the same since the dawn of time, basically. But
okay.
There wasn't, I don't think there were any new major influences, but the way the whole thing started was that about a year ago, last summer, Tony, our singer-songwriter, he had a bunch of demos ready, and we could start to listen to his songs together with the rest of the band. Mm-hmm. And from there, we moved on to the studio in the fall. We first rehearsed the songs, and then we spent a few weeks recording all the music with our producer for the first time, Mikko Tegelman, who's also our front of house guy. And we brought him in because we wanted to make the album closer to what we sound live, and we thought he would be the best guy to help us with that, and I think we were right. So last fall we recorded all the music, and then Tony did the vocals in the springtime, and then we mixed the album around May, I think, and mastered it. So it was the album has been ready since the beginning of the summer.
Oh, very cool. Okay, so the way you guys tend to write your albums, does Tony start things off for you?
Yeah, he writes the songs, and then we start to work on the arrangement together once he has something to show for us.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. That's kind of why all of your albums have like the same kind of vibe, is because Tony usually starts them off.
Oh, yeah, That's true. I think so too. Yeah.
Okay. Can you tell me if are there any songs that maybe somebody else has started off?
No, not on this album.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So cool. So that's how this album is similar to the others. But what makes this one different?
As I said previously, we worked with a producer, and that was the first time for us ever. Our earlier albums, we always made them by ourselves, more or less.
Okay.
And now we had a producer who could listen to the stuff with fresh ears and give some comments and pointers and give us the right kind of kick in the ass to make sure that we gave the best performances we could and stuff like that. So, yeah, it was interesting.
That's great. Yeah, usually bands start with a producer very early on, so that's interesting. I didn't know you guys have never worked with a producer before.
Oh, yeah, we've been talking about it for quite a few years, but we are stubborn people, so it has to be the right guy, and of course, since we know Mikko for many years because he does our sound at the shows, so we dared to take the leap and bring him in as well, and I think that was a really good decision.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You definitely need somebody that you can vibe with, because having someone you don't like tell you to do it take 20 times, that sounds awful.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Okay, so you guys put out a song before the album was released. The song is called A Little Less Understanding. So this song had a lot of people talking. Some people are saying it's very pretty. Some people are saying it's a little bit less metal than your previous releases. So I'd like to know, why did you guys decide to use this as your single?
Well, I mean, we didn't.
Oh, okay.
I mean, yeah, of course, it's our choice ultimately. But we were not thinking about taking this song as a single at all. It was supposed to be the Japanese bonus track at some point. But then... our manager heard it and he suggested that this should be the first single, and so we went with it. It's usually when a band like us who have or at least try to make albums with a lot of variety in it, it's really hard to choose the single, because no matter which song you're going to choose, it's not going to represent the album really well anyway.
Absolutely.
So this was the first single, and there's going to be a second single later this month.
Oh, exciting. Very cool. Yeah, so I'm part of a couple of online communities that, you know, listens to a lot of heavy metal, a lot of power metal. And so we talk about you guys a lot. You know, I've been a big fan of you guys for, like, I want to say, like, close to since the beginning. When I was in college, I went to one of your shows in Springfield, Virginia, and this was in about 2006. And yeah. Oh yeah, it was amazing. Like I remember being so inspired when I saw you guys play live. And right. I remember wanting to keep on following you. So a couple of years ago, my band opened for you in Baltimore, and right. I think you were with Epica at the time, yeah?
That might be true. I'm not sure. Yeah.
I think you guys were touring with Epica. So we opened for you at Baltimore Soundstage, and that was one of the biggest shows that I have ever seen. Like, it was completely full of people. So my question is, do you guys tend to play shows like that are just completely full these days? Because I remember playing, seeing you guys at Jax, and of course it wasn't as big, but you guys have gotten so big lately. Like, is that just it for you now? Are you just sold out everywhere you go?
I wish. But no, that's not the entire, that's not really true. It might be that we opened up for Nightwish, actually, I didn't mention it. But yeah. It depends on a little bit where we are touring, but for example, in Finland, we are doing really, really well, and sold out shows happen a lot of the times. But other than that, I mean, we do get a good crowd, but nothing like that, you saw. So it's a bit, unfortunately,
it was
misrepresenting. But we haven't had to play for empty rooms at least. So that's good. About that. Yeah. And so, it depends on the day and the place. Sometimes there's more people, sometimes less. But I think we're doing quite okay. I mean, we're still making a living off of this, so everything is fine. Yeah, I think that's so.
That's awesome. So, before that show, I noticed you guys had a meet and greet. I know, like, a lot of bands don't enjoy doing meet and greets. So some people look like they're just tired. Some people look like they're bored. Do you have, like, a favorite moment from those meet and greets? Like, something that stands out to you?
Well, I mean, I don't know. Of course, I think it is, of course, sometimes you are tired and then it's hard to master the energy, but most of the times you're not. And then I think it's okay to do meet and greets. I think it's nice to meet people for a while. And I mean, who wouldn't like to meet people who are happy about seeing you?
So I think I take
an hour out of your day to make some fans happy. I don't think it's not a too big effort for me, and I really see how much it means to people to get to talk to us for a while. So I think when you see the reaction, you realize that it's something that is important to do, and we as a band want to give back, you know, because the fans are the ones who make it possible for us to do this. And you know, if we take a little bit of time to talk to people to give back what we have gotten from the fans, I don't think it's something you can be whiny about or I personally don't understand bands who don't meet with fans.
That's great to hear. I love hearing bands talk about the fact that they actually want to meet their fans.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I understand. Sometimes you are tired, and that's perfectly natural, but a lot of the times that's not the case. And so,
yeah,
I don't mind meeting people.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Do you have any favorite moments from meeting a fan? Like, do you have a fan that stands out to you that you'd like to do a shout out to?
I don't know, if I say something, then somebody else is going to be pissed. So,
okay, so no playing favorites. That's fair.
Yeah. I'm not going to play any favorites. But a lot of times there are so many people who we have met that have been just absolutely wonderful, and that happens, you know, every time you meet fans. There's people who stand out in their own peculiar ways, and so that's how it is, and I think that's great.
Okay, that's awesome. So you have played basically all over the world. Can I ask you where your favorite place in the whole world to play is?
Oh, you can.
You can't.
Yeah, you can. You can. But yeah, I think South America has been the wildest for us.
Really?
Lately, yeah. The crowds are just absolutely crazy there. But then, of course, you know, if you say something like that, then it's also like playing favorites. So
No. That's inspiration for everyone else.
Yeah. I think crowd-wise, I think people are wildest there, or then south of Europe is also like Italy and Spain and maybe France to some extent.
Oh, okay.
Those are really, really wild crowds.
That's great.
Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, I hear that a lot, that South American fans are just crazy. You know, watching Iron Maiden in Brazil, that's like an entirely other world that I have never experienced. So I love hearing that.
Yeah, well, it is really surreal, actually.
That's cool. That's cool. Okay, so I'm gonna hook on back to you guys' albums. I have listened to every single one of your albums, and one of my favorite things to note that you guys like to do is add a little wolf howl every so often. Can I ask what's up with the wolf howl? Do you guys just really like wolves?
Yeah, I think it started. It started right at the beginning. I mean, the wolf as an animal is quite fascinating, and then you know, you from the first album, it was in Full Moon. You had this werewolf thing or whatever going on.
Yes.
And then on Silence, when you write a song called Wolf and Raven, then after that, you cannot pretty much get out of it anymore.
Yes.
So after that, it's been wolf songs everywhere. And it's kind of has become our power animal or something like that.
Yeah.
And there is actually one album with no wolf songs. I think it was Stone Scroll, her name.
Yes, yes. I noticed during that album that you guys did got a little bit different. Yeah.
Yeah, but that was. But other than that, we have wolves on every album, at least in one song. Sometimes in many. So it just has become a symbol.
That is great. That is great. Okay, so speaking of Stones Grow Her Name, I remember me and my band, A Sound of Thunder, we were on tour when that album was released. And I told the guys, shut up, we're driving. I need to listen to this whole album. And the song that stood out to me was Shitload of Money. So I really want to hear about the inspiration. Like, why did you guys decide to do this song that was so different?
Oh my god, that's a long time ago.
Yeah,
I think Tony had actually the intro for that song earlier, and we listened to it quite a few times, and then it turned out to a song. And I think the whole album, Stone Scroll Her Name, has a lot of it's maybe a little more hard rock than we usually are, and especially that song. And I don't know, it sounded like a good track, so we recorded it. And then, of course, the lyrical side that actually makes the spin on the whole thing, like Shitload of Money, that's all Tony's fault. I'm not taking any blame for that.
That is great.
So I don't know. I mean, it's like a lot of times you start to do something and then you just realize afterwards that maybe, okay.
That's fun.
Yeah, exactly. And so, of course, when we start doing stuff like that, you have to take it as far as possible. So we made a video for it as well.
Yes. And I remember the video.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the only video I think we have with chicks on it. So it's like, go figure. Yeah.
Go figure. Oh, that's great. That's great. Yeah, I have a lot of friends that we always try and like understand you guys' lyrics, because one of the things that Sonata Arctica is known for is your lyrics. Your lyrics are all so well written and they have a lot of meaning behind them. So when Shitload of Money came out, we were like, okay, this is very different.
Yeah, that's
what that pissed off true. Tony that day, you know?
I don't know. I doubt he knows.
That's great.
Yeah.
Okay. So speaking of songs, what is your favorite song to perform live?
That depends. Probably always the new stuff.
Because the new stuff.
Yeah. But whenever you get some new stuff to play, that's always exciting, because even though you rehearse it, it's always a bit different when you play it live, and then you have to focus a bit more. I mean, if you play a song that you played like 100 times, it's not the same kind of energy.
Absolutely.
Maybe. And in this, you have this small, like, panic, like, you know, is this going to work or is it not? And you have to be, like, really, really focused. And I think that's what make it exciting, so...
Absolutely.
And of course, whenever you get the song that you have never played live before, it's always interesting to see how many shows it's going to take before it starts to really take off and work really,
yeah, really, really well. Yeah, and you guys have the benefit of having like an actual keyboard player who fills out the sound, and you don't need to rely on backing tracks. So the energy for you guys is always there. That's what I appreciate, is that everything for you guys is real and live.
Yeah, well, we actually do use some backing tracks, but
don't tell anybody. I take it back.
Yeah, now it's mostly for you know, if we have like spoken parts, for example, or some really hardcore effects, and on some songs we have orchestrations, like symphony orchestra kind of stuff. So those things are on the backing tracks, but it's not really crucial for our shows, and the backing tracks are not really that high in the mix anyway.
Right, exactly. So, no, but, you guys, yeah. That's what I love about you guys is that you have all of everything that you need is in you. So when we see you play, you know, it feels like we're actually really watching you play. And we really appreciate that as an audience, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that is how it is. And also, I mean, if the backing tracks breaks down, it doesn't matter. We can still play the show. So.
Exactly. So, and I have seen backing tracks break down many times.
Yeah.
I think I was at one show where they had to go on very, very late because someone's laptop wasn't working. And that's a disaster.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. All right. So I think I have asked you most of my questions, but this is the question that I like to ask people who have been in a band like yours for so long. This is going to be your 10th album, I believe.
Yeah.
What advice would you have for someone who wants to do what you do for a living? Because I can't imagine you don't have advice.
Well, for someone who wants my job?
Yeah, someone who wants your job, exactly.
Of course, I have a lot of advice, but if it's good advice, I don't know about that. I think the most important thing is to enjoy yourself. I mean, if you don't enjoy rehearsing and spending time with your bandmates and trying to figure out how to write songs and stuff like that, if you don't enjoy that, then you're in it for the wrong reasons and shouldn't do it. So if it's not fun, don't do it.
Yeah.
Because there'll be plenty of times when it's not going to be fun when it's your job. And then you need that initial inspiration to carry you over those bumps in the road, so to speak. And I think it's a lot of people are focused these days on success and making it and getting money and all that shit. And that doesn't really matter. Of course, I think the main thing is that you know, make music with your friends and have a good time, and then you see what happens after that. I mean, that's the starting point is the most important.
Oh my gosh, I love hearing that. You know what's funny? Oscar from Hammerfall, the exact same advice. How funny.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, not even kidding. And you know, right. When I think of that question, when I hear people answer, oh, you know, play the kind of music that you love, that makes me so happy because, you know, I will say as a musician, people give me terrible advice all the time. They say, oh, you should play this, you should play that if you want to be successful. So to hear actual successful musicians say, no, don't listen to those people, play what you like. I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, that is true. I mean, because if there would be a recipe, okay, if you play this kind of music, you will get famous, then everybody would do it. So it doesn't work like that.
Exactly. Oh, I love it. I love it. That's so wonderful. Awesome. Well, I don't have any other questions for you. Would you like to plug your album? Would you like to talk about it? Like, is there something you really want your fans to know?
Well, not really. I mean, I think that's what we just did for the past half hour. So,
okay, that's cool.
I don't know. I mean, I just hope people check it out. That's all. And either you like it or you don't, then I mean, as far as I'm concerned, it's already out of our hands anyway. So I'm only hoping people check it out. And I think we managed to do something great, and it will hold its own as long as somebody checks it out.
That's great. That's great. Well, thank you so much for speaking with me. I really appreciate it. We're going to put this on the podcast very soon, and people will get to listen to your lovely voice.
Oh, my God.
I'm excited. And I'm sorry. I noticed that you are listed as a singer on a lot of your albums. Do you do a lot of backup singing? Because I had no idea.
Yeah, I do some, yeah. Not so much on the albums, but live all the time, yeah.
Ah, okay, that makes sense. Well, I'm glad to hear it. Well, thank you so much for talking to me. I'm going to send this over, and it'll be up soon, and we'll let you know when it's up.
All right, thank you, too. It was nice talking to you.
You, too. Right. Have a great day.
You, too. Have a great day.
You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.